The buildup of greenhouse gases in the atmosphere leads to global warming, climate change if you prefer. There are lots of ways to explain the process, and today you'll hear of a new one, the deployment of the color pink. Corvallis author Greg Kleiner shows greenhouse gases as pink in a book he wrote for kids, illustrated by Laurel Thompson. The book is called Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink, which is hard to say very fast, but that's okay. Greg Kleiner is, again, our guest. He's worked as a journalist, a novelist, a wildlife biologist, a dairy goat farmer, and more. Greg Kleiner, thanks for joining us on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's good to be here.
I understand you live pretty close to the confluence of the Marys and Willamette Rivers and write about rivers a fair amount.
That's right. Yeah, I've been in Oregon all my life with various trips to other places around the world, but I always come back.
And I understand one of your works, Where River Turns to Sky, was optioned for a movie. How's that progressing?
Yeah, well, that was with Fox Searchlight, and Hollywood's an interesting place. So they're still kicking it around, but I've learned that you don't keep your fingers crossed for Hollywood.
No, you could break a knuckle that way, I think.
Yeah,
keeping your fingers crossed. So, don't see previous books for kids in your list of works. Is this your first effort like this?
It is. It is. I've written adult fiction for many years, but I wanted to do something aimed at kids and around the issue of climate change, because I feel that's one of the most important, if not the most important issue facing us today. And I thought, you know, why not start with kids and see if we can inspire some young minds to tap their imagination to start seeing the sources of climate change.
Was there a particular spark, something, you know, the pink things from the flowers floating through the air or something that made you think of this?
Oh, you know, it was my two kids. I'm a father of two, and I woke up thinking, you know, gee whiz, what can I do as a writer to try to make a change in the world? Because they're going to inherit our climate that's going to be altered by our emissions and our generation, my generation's excesses. What can I do? So I thought, can I apply storytelling to this and somehow get people inspired to see things in a different way? You know, one of the issues, the main issue with climate change, is you can't see what's causing. It's happening all around us, and you just can't see why. So I thought, wow, what would happen if you could see carbon dioxide?
And methane, for that matter, too, as we get into the cows. We'll get to that good time. The book opens with Wilbur, a 10-year-old narrator. Is he based on anybody you know?
No, Wilbur, people say he looks like my son, but he's not necessarily based on anyone I know. The name comes from, he was named by his parents for the famous character in Charlotte's Web, which Wilbur does not appreciate, so he goes by Will.
And so his dad has this idea for thinking of carbon dioxide as pink, and Wilbur basically thinks he's got a screw loose, which brings up the question how your family reacted to the idea for this book.
How what?
How your family reacted to the idea for the book and the pink skies.
Oh, they liked it. Yeah, they liked it. You know, I wanted the book to work on two levels, because it's not just for kids, but it's also for adults to try to get a conversation going back and forth about this. And yeah, both my kids were older now, but they both appreciated it and thought it was well done.
How long has this been in process?
Let's see. You know, it takes a while. I worked with an illustrator doing the illustration. She's a young woman here in Corvallis who very talented, never done a children's book before, and took us about probably close to a year working together to get the illustrations. They're all actually watercolor illustrations, nothing done on the computer, so that took some time. So it's been a couple of years, and we don't have a lot of time. So
that's impressive, like, that you got it cranked out in a year, because it is it's a very lavishly illustrated book. It's quite attractive. And Laurel, you said Laurel Thompson, this is the first time she's done something like this?
Yeah, it's the first time she's done anything like this, and she really knocked it out of the park. Really has a great eye and a lot of skill for art. So Laurel did a great job.
Greg Kleiner, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. He is the author with illustrator Laurel Thompson of the book Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink. It's a story for children and their adults about climate change and greenhouse gases. Greenhouse gases colored pink in this context. Join us on the Exchange with questions or comments. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So why pink? There must be a process here to figuring out what was going to work.
Yeah, well, first of all, there's that alliteration that you mentioned at the beginning of the show where you trip up on all the P's in the title, which I wanted. And then I wanted, there's a thread that runs through the book about gender stereotypes as well. And so for that to work, I need to pink. And then, you know, people have said, well, why'd you pick pink? You know, that's about cancer and all that. And I thought, you know, well, in a way, this is a kind of a cancer for the planet. So why not do pink? So that was the thinking on that. And I wanted to, you know, when you're writing for kids about something like climate change, you know, you don't want to scare them or frighten them with too many facts or too much science. So I tried to get a careful balance of humor and a little climate science, and then the illustrations, just to get it across in a way that people can hear.
It's not, you know, the book is pitched pretty well, I think, at a slightly older child. I mean, I'm thinking 10 years plus, but what were you thinking when you were putting it together?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was wanting to kind of resonate with someone maybe as young as 6 or 7 and then up to 10. I had a young boy in Ireland who was 13 who read it with his mom, actually, and they sent me a little video clip, and he liked it. So, yeah, I wanted to hit this range of kids, and from a parent who can sit down with his child or her child and, you know, read it together to an older young person who could read it themselves and start thinking of, wow, what's coming out of my chimney? What's not coming out of my bicycle, kind of a thing.
You mentioned the 13-year-old in Ireland. I wondered if there were other trial runs with kids to kind of give you some feedback on the concept and how it was executed.
No, I'd read some parts to people, and it was they responded well. I had a reading here at our local bookstore, and there were a lot of people came out, and the kids were in the front row, and they were pretty riveted. So, you know, it's not for the toddlers, the 2 and 3 year olds, obviously, but for kids, just to get them to start thinking. It's like, wow, what's behind this, and what can I do as a person who's going to be growing up in this world.
There are some pretty subtle concepts in here, but they're carried off pretty well. And honestly, the color pink certainly does them some justice in the sense that you can, you know, it's, oh, that's how that works. Like the comparisons of the emissions of trains versus cars. Can you lay out that situation for us?
Yeah, I was just trying to show that, you know, you have a freeway packed full of cars, and every car is this pink puffs, these pink clouds are coming out of the tailpipes. And if you put all those people on a train goes by, but you've got a much lower amount of pink coming out of the train, or then you have a plane going over and there's a lot of pink. I'm trying to just compare, you know, what the difference is between different modes of transportation, and yet if you get on your bicycle, there's no pink at all coming out, other than, I suppose, technically there might be a little coming out of your own mouth as carbon dioxide. But and then I also have a little scene in there of them standing around a campfire. There's a little puff of pink coming above the campfire, just saying, you know, we have to have fun and roast some marshmallows now and then too. So, and I talk about the factory smokestacks, where, you know, all this stuff's made that we're buying, and it's being made in factories, and there's a lot of pink being generated there.
Well, there truly is something for everyone in the book, including cow farts that we hinted at before. So.
Yeah, the kids all like that part.
No doubt. Cow butts and mouths, you say, from the cows burping and passing gas. Yeah, you had some fun with this. That's pretty clear.
Yeah, no doubt. You got to have fun. I mean, even with things in the state they are, I think humor is very important. So.
Did you have a science advisor, Greg, or at least someone to look it over and kind of bounce the concepts off of?
I did bounce it off a few people, yeah. And actually, Bill McKibben read it. They found her at 350.org and really liked it. And some others, and I did fine-tune the science a little bit, but I have a biology background, so I was pretty close with it to start with.
How'd you make the connection to Bill McKibben and Kathleen Dean Moore?
You know, I know Kathleen. She's a friend of mine, actually, here in Corvallis, and Bill McKibben, I followed his work, and I just sent him a copy of the book, thinking I may not hear back, and he wrote back right away and said, well, and gave me the blurb about, he'd always wondered what would happen if CO2 were visible, and now he knows.
You kept the book really upbeat, and I wonder how hard it was to keep a subject like this from getting fairly gloomy and gray.
Well, you know, yeah, and I've seen books out there, and it's like either you're just hit with a fire hose of facts, or just daunting, like we're doomed kind of information, and I just said, I don't want to do that. Childhood is precious time, and parents don't need that either. We need something that's gonna, you know, have some content, but not be so doom and gloom. And I think humor is so important. You know, you think back in the 60s when people were demonstrating, people were having fun. There was music and art, and yeah, things were tough, but we got to keep dancing and laughing through it all.
Greg Kleiner's our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, a Corvallis writer and a scientist in training as well. He's written out a book for children about greenhouse gases called Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink, in which the greenhouse gases are represented as pink. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments on topic, 800-838-3760 over the phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. You know, I was just mentioning the fact that the book doesn't look gloomy or gray. You know, there's one place where you show the planes flying through the sky and the factories putting out stuff and the houses putting out smoke and the cars putting out smoke all on the same page, which I guess in another color would have looked really threatening. In pink, it doesn't look quite so much so. So, I mean, you get the message that there's, you know, this pink saturation here, but maybe because of the color, it didn't end up quite as scary, I guess, as it might have been to younger kids.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. Had that all been gray, that looks pretty doomy and gloomy. And I make the comparison that the dad's trying to get the kid to see this color that he can't see, and the kid's kind of saying, what are you talking about, Dad? And he's the kid is guessing, you know, cotton candy and flamingos and the three little pigs and so the pink theme worked for trying to get a young person to guess what things might be pink that you can't see.
Wilbur's dad, as the narrative says, draws crazy fast. Do you draw crazy fast? Do you draw at all, for that matter?
Oh, I scribble a bit. I'm not a much of an artist. I'm more of a literary artist. But Laurel Thompson, she draws fast and draws well, and she did these sketches because the father's sketching and then adding a little pink puff to these. Mm-hmm. She has plans for maybe a coloring book one of these times too to tie in with this.
I was wondering about that, particularly since adult coloring books are so hot right now.
Yeah,
you could have them for all levels, which raises the question about the level that you're shooting for in the book. Again, it is not for the youngest of kids, but it certainly can be appreciated by both adults and children, I imagine makes a bit of a trick in the writing. It's kind of like trying to write animated films, and you're trying to make sure the adults don't get bored to tears while their kids are getting entertained.
Yeah, you know, and most adults that have read that have said, you know, wow, huh, I learned something as well in this book. And you know, ideally, it could be used in a class, a science class, for instance, where there's a little segment on climate change, and it's a point of discussion, a place to start talking about this. You know, how can we work together? What if when you're taking a shower, is there any pink coming out of the chimney on your house from your water heater, or you know, things like that?
Ooh, what is the answer to that one? I mean, if you're burning natural gas, there's going to be some pink coming out, right?
Absolutely. Yep. And there's a couple illustrations in the book of someone showering, whistling in the shower, then at the top of the house, a little pink puff's coming out. So yeah, it's anytime you're burning fossil fuel, you're generating a little pink, and it's not doing good things to the atmosphere right now.
I noticed the person whistling in the shower. That's on the same page with the big splash of pink across the sky with the planes and factories and all that stuff. And yet, here's a person who's relatively happy taking a shower. So it's not,
yeah.
You know, people are not getting really down and depressed in the book by any stretch of the imagination.
Right. Yeah, and the dad, he uses this. He's got a pair of green goggles, bright green goggles. They don't have any lenses in them, and he tries to use these to get Wilbur, the kid, to see pink, even though there's no lenses in him. It's all about tapping your imagination. And that's, to me, what we have to do. We have to look out, and if you're sitting on I-5 or the freeway in traffic, and imagine all that pink coming up from the rear ends of those cars.
This came from you. It certainly is a way for the rest of us to start thinking on a regular basis about the effects of our actions. How different are you thinking about greenhouse gases since you put this work together?
Well, you know, this is the place where I'm working right now and trying to do all I can to turn the aircraft carrier that is climate change. And it's a matter of engaging people and engaging people's minds to start doing what we can. And that's slowing the burning of fossil fuels. We have to keep them in the ground, as Bill McKibben says. I mean, it's critical. And which means we have to kind of shift our lifestyles a little bit. But I think if we go back to family and love and caring for one another, we can pull together and turn the aircraft carrier here. But it's going to take all of us, which is why I look at kids, because they're the ones coming up. And how can we get them to see things a little differently and get on their bicycle instead of asking mom and dad for the ride in the car or taking a short shower? Let's get kids challenging each other to take 1-minute showers. I mean, it takes everybody on board to make this happen.
When we use the metaphor of the aircraft carrier, do you feel like it at least has nudged maybe a few degrees from where it was going?
Oh, I think it has. You look back, the term climate change, it didn't exist or wasn't even in the news, 5 to 8 to 10 years ago, and now it's everywhere. So people are growing. There's a huge awareness. People are doing a lot of good stuff, and we just need to keep building on that. And again, it's hard because you can't see the stuff. Here's a beautiful day today. The sun's out up here. What's wrong with this? But up there, there's climate change. It's working on us. So,
who seems to like the book more so far of the people who've given you feedback on it? The kids or the adults who read it to them?
Both. The kids get a little sparkle in their eyes, especially when you're talking about cow farts. They giggle. I've had science teachers who really, really like the book, and they're using it in their classrooms. And then parents who are actually, I think they learn something from this, that they learn about where carbon is stored in these old dinosaur pits and grasses and trees that have been buried. That's where coal and oil come from. This is ancient sunlight that is trapped under the earth that we're digging up and burning, and we kind of need to stop that.
When you mentioned teachers using it in the classroom, it brings up the question about whether climate change has become, I mean, there's so much controversy about it in the political system.
Right.
One way or the other. But when you think about the fact that we get arguments over textbooks that teach the facts about history, just right. Which facts? You know, I just wonder if you've got any knowledge of it becoming that much of a political football in the educational system by now.
You know, I haven't. This particular book, the teachers I've been in touch with really like it. They definitely agree that climate change is happening. And I think the whole denial thing is slowing down. So
that'd be good. Will we see Wilbur and his dad again? Is there a sequel to Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink?
You know, I haven't thought about that, but maybe we should.
The pink is still coming or something. Yeah, we're slowing the pink. I don't know. We can work on
this. Yeah, right.
Greg Kleiner, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about Please Don't Paint Our Planet Pink.
Thank you, Jeffrey. It's been a pleasure.
All right, take care.